Alright, so this hour we're all going to pretend that we're enrolled in a graduate class on Schubert calculus, and this is the very first day. So after Alex's beautiful panoramic view, which... Oops. Oh, it was here, wasn't it? Which got erased. So there were all kinds of bubbles there with all kinds of connections. And as I said, we're going to pretend that we're in an introductory lecture. So I'm going to focus on the bubble that was right here, and I'm not going to talk about any other of the bubbles, and so I'm just going to tell you what Schubert varieties are in case you are new to the subject. And I must say it's slightly embarrassing to be talking about this in front of an audience that's half experts. So please feel free to interrupt at any time if I'm not saying something in the best possible way. And also, I should say that most of what I'm saying is in this blue book, Fulton's Young Tableau, mainly in the first couple sections of chapter 10. So if anything I'm saying is unclear, that's where to go. Okay. So, that's the title. So what I'd like to get to at the very end is, first of all, to introduce you to the main geometric players that Alex kindly introduced in the last hour. So these will be, I should say also, I'll be mainly focusing on type A today, although I'm supposed to say at the very end some mumbling words about you can do this for general Lie groups, but I'm going to focus on GLN of C, and basically the story is the same. So the main players, I'll tell you what the flag variety is, what the Grassmannian is. I'll tell you about, and here Joel is going to laugh, I'll tell you about the torus action. That's on the flag variety. Yes, he's laughing. Okay. What'd you say? And I'll tell you what Schubert varieties are. And then I'll draw some pictures, which is really what I want to get to. Those of you who know some of what I do, you'll know that basically I make a living thinking about these pictures, which is how you draw Schubert varieties, or as Joel said in his CMS talk a few days ago, how to take a snapshot and think about the variety in a very concrete picture, which involves graphs. So this is sort of where I want to get to, but I should tell you everything else first. Okay, so let's start with the main players. Okay, so first, let's do the flags. Oh, getting myself into a corner here, but okay, so flags, what are they? Well, they're just a choice of subspaces that are included into each other, so you just keep going all the way up to Cn, and of course I'm going to require that each one of these guys is the dimension that I have on the label there. So I start with the zero-dimensional subspace, go up to a one-dimensional subspace, and then the next one will be a two-dimensional subspace containing that one, et cetera, et cetera. At the end I get Cn, and this is what I'm going to call the flag variety, but it's a set of maximal chains of subspaces in Cn. And there's lots that's known about these, but first let me just set some terminology. So these guys are called flags. I should say, I guess, complete flags. I'm very surely going to be lazy and not bother to say complete, but anyway, for now, are called complete flags. And so this guy, FL for flags, of course, is called, therefore, the flag manifold or the flag variety. So Alex already hinted, well, okay, so Alex talked about a slightly special case where you don't have this maximal chain, you only have one. The Grassmannian is one where you only have one of these subspaces. But anyway, so he already alluded to the fact that this is a compact, nice variety. So I'll get to that. I'll show you why that really, oh dear. Okay. I'll show you why you can really think of that as a nice compact space. In fact, it'll be a homogeneous space. So, but before I say anything else, just in case you haven't seen this before, the reason they're called flags is because if you pretend you're an RN and you draw the first couple, it really looks like a flag. So here, let me show you. Here's the zero-dimensional space. Here's the one-dimensional space that contains it, and here's the two-dimensional space that contains that. So you see, it looks like a flag, so that's why it's called that, or at least that's what I was told when I first took my Lie group class. So there you go, because they look like it. At the beginning, anyway. But anyway, really what we want to study when we study the flag variety is the group action on it. And, well, as I said, and we're going to think of it as a homogeneous space momentarily. So let me show you what the group is at X. So if I let V just denote this chain, okay, and I think of a matrix in GLN of C, then gx on V, in the obvious way, I'm just going to move around all the subspaces. So gx on V by just G acting on V, you just move. Of course, this stays the same as it has to. It's just the 0, 1. But all the other ones move around, and you get a new flow flag. Okay. All right, and let's point out a couple of first things. So there's a particularly nice flag that I'll work with a lot in the next few minutes. So there's a standard flag is the one that you get if you just take sort of the I dimensional coordinate subspaces. So these are given by, I'll just denote it by EI. So if I let EI just be the standard first, take the first I coordinates and the rest to be zero, so that's a subspace, then I get the standard flag. So okay, so that's one thing we want to keep in mind, just a special one that is around, sticking around. Okay. All right, well, so now I want to convince you that there's many different ways to think about the space, and in particular, as I was advertising earlier, that you can think of it as a homogeneous space. So to do that, let me first observe that, well, if you want to specify what a flag is, so that's just a collection of subspaces, well, then certainly all I need to do really is to give you a, for example, for V, to say what V1 is, the first dimension 1 space, all I need to do is give you a basis element. And then, well, V2 contains V1, so all I need to do is give you one more vector and so on, and I just build it up. So what I'm trying to say is all you need to do is give me a basis, and in fact, I can just choose it to be orthonormal. So in order to specify a flag, I don't have to think of it in this way as a chain of subspaces. I could just as well think of it as a choice of basis, but of course there's some ambiguity there. So let me just write down what I've said so far. So you could pick these vectors in, let's see, how did I write this? So VI, and then to make it orthogonal, I'll just pick sequentially these vectors, and then for each I, this gives us an orthonormal basis. Cn. So of course, for example, for the standard flag, you just get the standard orthonormal basis. For Cn. Okay. And then, of course, from this, as I was saying a moment ago, from that, you could just reconstruct the flag by taking spans. So from which we can reconstruct V. Oops. Reconstruct. Okay. Okay, well, why did I bother saying that? Because now I've gotten myself to thinking just about orthonormal bases. Well, we already said that G, L, and a C acts on this space of flags, so in other words, it also acts on these choices of orthonormal bases that specify the flags. Well, UNC, the unitary group, sits inside G, L, and a C and acts transitively on choices of orthonormal frames. Therefore, G, L, and C actually acts transitively on the space of flags. Well, okay, so UNC acts transitively on the space of flags, so we can think of it as a homogeneous space. So, since the unitary group, which sits inside this guy, and therefore this acts on the flags, acts transitively on orthonormal bases, okay. It acts, therefore, transitively on the flag. Manifold. Okay? And, well, if you think about it, if I just restrict myself to UNC, the action of UNC, and if I think about the standard flag and ask myself, okay, so as I said a second ago, well, if you do that, then you get the standard basis. Well, or rather, that is a choice that you could take for specifying the standard flag. And then you ask yourself, okay, so which elements in here stabilize that flag? And the answer is it's the torus. So therefore, the flag manifold is just UNC mod the torus. So since TN is the stabilizer of the standard flag, we conclude that, in fact, it's just this. Okay. So in particular, you see that what Alex was saying earlier is indeed true, that this is just a compact manifold. Okay, so you can see that immediately there. In fact, we can even compute, just from this description, we can even compute the dimension, so it's a compact manifold. Dimension, let's do it over R. Wait a second. Yeah, sorry. That's great, my sense. Okay. All right, but there's another description that we sometimes want to use. So this is the compact description. So that's sort of the symplectic side, if you like, the symplectic manifestation of the flag manifold. But you can also do the algebraic. So let's think about that description. And actually, I guess I have it all up there already. So now, forget about taking an orthonormal basis. Let's just think about the standard flag and ask ourselves which elements in G, L, and C stabilize the standard flag. And then if you think about that, well, it's just the upper triangular matrices. So thinking about it in that direction, stabilizer, is the stabilizer, well, okay. Thinking about the stabilizer of the standard flag in GLN instead, see that's just the Borel subgroup. That's the Borel. So that's the stuff that's just upper triangular. Zero stuff. And so you also see that the flag manifold is also, so this is the algebraic side of the flag manifold, it's also just GLNT mod the Borel. So it's also a complex manifold. Okay. Okay so far? All right. Okay, so that's just what the flag variety is. Now let me just make the official comment that you can also, so I just presented it for the full, complete flags, but you can also do it for partial flags, by which I mean you can just omit choices of various subspaces in between. So you can also do the same game. I mean, I'm not going to repeat everything, but you can also play this game. And all that will happen is that this one will get slightly bigger, and so will this one. And I'll just mention explicitly the example that Alex mentioned several times, the Grassmannian, because that's just a special case that we really care about a lot. As Alex pointed out, there's lots of applications there. So let's see. So, okay, for partial flags, we just omit some of the choices of subspaces in between. So you might get something that looks like this. So you just decide, okay, that you're only going to pick subspaces of certain dimensions. So you just have, etc. So I've only picked certain. Certain spaces of certain dimension. Okay, but then there's this particularly special case is the Grassmannian. So let's see, let me follow Alex's notation. So I think he wrote it like this. Okay, that's the one where you just actually just pick one subspace, so you forget about, you know, list of subspaces, just one of a particular dimension k. So that's just a choice of one subspace. Okay. This is called the Grassmannian of k planes. Let me just say, though, in this case, what you get, just so that you see that the same sort of game goes through, so in this case, here, the standard K-plane would just be what you expect. It's the coordinate plane taking the first K entries. And then you can just see that the stabilizer is this block matrix where you have stuff, zero, and stuff, where this guy is k, and n minus k. Parabolic. Okay, so the Grassmannian will be just GLNC mod a parabolic instead. Okay, let me write that down. So same sort of thing. And then you can see, again, this computer's dimension and so on. So again, it's compact. It's a nice thing. Okay. All right, so now let me move on to this torus action, which turns out to take a lot of our attention and comes in very handy. Okay, so there's a particular torus acting, and it won't surprise you, it's just a subgroup of the GLNC that's acting. I guess I should say, so I guess I am poking out a little bit from that one bubble that I promised you I would restrict myself to. So this comes in handy, especially in the bubble, let's see here. I think Schubert calculus was here and Eckervent cohomology was up here. So I am, so somehow this is going towards a computation of Eckervent cohomology, although it's useful in many other situations as well. Anyway, so what is that torus action? Well, let me think, if T is a diagonal, so the diagonal matrix is sitting inside GLNC, so it's just a maximal torus. So it's just this stuff. Okay? Which I think of course, is sitting inside GLNC, so this acts on the flag, of course. Oh, yeah, right. Let's see. Let me look at the compact torus. Okay, so, yeah, sure. Okay, so I guess I should think of this as, let me look at the compact torus. You can tell I'm a symplectic geometer, because my, yeah, right. Okay, all right, so, well, just by restricting the action, I get an action of the torus on the flags. And now what I'd like to do, for reasons that will not become clear for another 15 or so minutes, but what I want to do is I want to ask, okay, what are the T-fixed points? Okay, turns out to be handy to know this. Okay, so, let's put it here, so question, okay, what are the T-fixed points? The reason I'm asking will become apparent. Okay, so we already said that, so I've already established that really we can think about a flag as just an orthonormal basis, except there's some ambiguity as to the choice, but anyway, I can think of it as an orthonormal basis. So the way I want to think about answering this question is to just think of a flag then as being represented by a matrix where I just think of the first column as the basis element spanning the first one, and then to get V2, the next one, I just look at the span of the first two columns, etc. Okay, so that's clear. So this, from now on, I'm going to think of, I'm never going to think of it as this chain again, I'm just going to think of it as being represented as a matrix. If you like, I'm just thinking of it. In this way, and I'm just picking a representative. Okay. So VI is just the span of the first I columns, etc. Okay, so that's what I mean. Okay. So then, if you think about how the torus, so the torus is just this diagonal guy, and then I'm going to multiply, just by left multiplication, I'm going to multiply this matrix that represents my flag, and then I ask, all right, when is that, when do I get the same flag back? Okay, and the answer I won't go through why that is, but since we're pretending this is a graduate class, here's an exercise. Okay, so what it is it's the guys that you get if the matrix that you're that you're looking at is a permutation matrix. Okay, so these are the flags associated to permutation matrices. Okay, so i.e., okay, so here I'm just going to have to draw a couple of examples, but, sorry, I guess I didn't say this, but so from now on, from when I started talking about the torus action onward, I'm just going to think, I know I just introduced the partial flags, but I'm just thinking about the full flag case, okay? Numbers end up different, but I'm just going to take the complete flags. Okay, so it's the n factorial flags of the form. Well, okay, so let me actually write it out as a flag one last time. So you just take the standard basis elements E sub I's, and then I just say, well, I just won't think of them in the standard order, but I'll permute them in some way. So sigma is a permutation, and here the E I's are just my standard basis. And, well, okay, that's not fair, because I told you I'd be thinking of them as matrices, so they're just, you know, so, example. So I just make one up. Let's see. Something like that. Okay, so that'll be in C4. And what's my point? My point is that I'll call these fixed points. So what did I say? So I just told you the answer. So there's n factorial fixed points, so they're discrete, and they're indexed by permutations, and I'll call the flags associated to them V sub lambdas. So call these particular special flags that are fixed by the torus action, I'll call these V sub lambda. Sorry, not lambda, sigma. And they're special elements in the flag manifold. Okay, so now I think I'm all basically ready to tell you what Schuba varieties are, yeah? Say that again? Well, here, I mean, here it happens to be so, but I mean, I don't have to. All right, so now I can tell you what Schuba varieties are, and it'll sound a lot like, I mean, again, if you haven't heard this before, it'll sound like what Alex was talking about earlier with this four lines problem and having intersections. So let's see, what section is this? 3? Okay, so what are they? Well, what you do is you just say, all right, so I've got the standard flag, and I'm going to compare all my other flags to the standard flag, and I'll ask for certain dimension counts for intersections. Okay, that's really what's going on. So that, you know, that should sound a little bit like what Alex was talking about earlier. Okay, so what we're going to do is decompose this big space of flags. Okay, which, again, you know, for the moment, they're just these matrices that represent bases and subspaces. We're going to decompose these by carefully analyzing how it compares, and I'll make that precise in just a moment, to the standard flag. I could use another flag, but I'm just going to use the standard one. Okay? Okay, so what do I mean by how it compares? Well, I'm going to intersect. So what am I going to do? I'm going to count the dimensions of intersections. So for example, you know, if V2 happens to be the same as E2, then the dimension of E2 intersect V2 is 2, and it tells me exactly that that for a particular choice of flag, well, that V2 is actually the same, and so on and so forth. Okay, so, well, let me just write down the formula. Okay, so And they're gonna, the decomposition is going to also be indexed by permutations, and that's not going to be an accident. We're going to see that each piece of the decomposition actually contains exactly one fixed point, but that comes in later. So let's just pick a permutation. And now here's the definition. And I will follow Alex's notation. I'll call it X sub sigma, right? I think it was. Except I'm not taking Schubert varieties yet. I'm not there yet. So let me say 0, okay, for the cell. Okay, so what's this? Right, so, well, I'll just look at those flags, which have these intersection properties, and it's going to, if you haven't seen it before, it's going to look mysterious, but we'll just do an example in a second and see that it's not so bad. Okay, so I already advertised. What we're going to be doing is we're going to intersect and just compare. Okay, so this has to be okay, for all I and j. Okay. So, there it is. Let's look at this in an example and see what this is telling us. Okay. Okay. So, let's just see what this is telling us. Let's look at an example where the V that I'm comparing with is actually one of these guys that we specially picked out. Okay. So this is looks mysterious until you just look at an example. So, all right, let's look at an example where V is just one of these special V sigmas that we just constructed. Okay? So I'll just do the example that I just wrote up here. Okay, so let's just stare at this example and see what this formula is telling us. Okay, so here's sigma. Okay, so I'm not good at this, so anyone in the audience, please correct me if I make a mistake. So, okay, so this is that. Let me just rewrite it here so I can stare at it here. Okay, so what am I saying here? So what is this? This is E3A1. Oh, gosh, no, I don't want to write this way, sorry. Okay, so what am I writing here? I'm writing this, right? Okay. Okay, and so how do I count these intersections? So let's just forget about the formula and just think about, okay, so how would I compare the flag that given by this with the standard flag. Okay, so for example, okay, just look at V1. Okay, well, what is V1? Well, it's just the span of this. Well, for the standard flag, it's the span of this. Right, so there's no intersection. Okay, so of course, it's the dimension is 0. Okay, and that corresponds to the fact that, all right, so if I just look here, then how many basis vectors sort of on the left side of the line that I drew, how many basis vectors actually sit inside E1? None. Right, so that's why it's 0. On the other hand, if I look here, okay, all right, so now I want to compare, let's say, V2 with E2, okay, then again, I cut here, I look to the left, and I ask myself, okay, how many of these vectors actually show up in the E2? In other words, how many have ones above the second row? Right, so that's exactly what I'm counting there. I'm just counting how many basis vectors. So if I cut at, what is it, if I cut at I, okay, then I'm just counting. So if I want to figure out what the intersection is with the standard flag, I just have to count how many of the basis vectors that show up here actually show up in, how many of the basis vectors here actually show up in the standard one. Okay, and that's exactly what that's counting. Okay, so let me just write down a few of these examples that we just talked about. So for example, as we said, so this one, the intersection has to be zero because none of the basis vectors to the left of this show up in E1. On the other hand, here, exactly one does. This one isn't in E2, so that doesn't get counted, but this one does, so it does get counted. So this one is, and so on. Okay, so let's see. So for this one, here we see that, well, so V3 is the span of these three, right? But, well, these vectors are exactly the first three standard basis vectors, albeit, you know, in a different order, but they're the same. So this next one is actually three, and so on. Okay, so that's what that's counting. Okay. So, again, if you just look at this example, not so intimidating. And so what I've just shown you, in fact, is that, in fact, in general, we have that V sigma actually is inside here. Okay. All right. Okay. Now I want to tell you a little bit more about, for example, so I just hit it. Okay. Let's learn a little bit more about this space. Okay. In particular, I'd like to know, for example, what's its dimension. Okay. Oh, yeah. I'm not quite sure. Well, I have colored chalk, but I'm not quite sure. I mean, what do you want? The Gcam graph? I mean, I'm not sure what you want. Oh, gosh. Can I do that later? I mean, yeah. Yeah, I mean, okay, let's. I mean, it's four-dimensional, right? So, I mean, how do you... Okay, I'm doing this later. Okay. Okay. All right. Okay, so, all right, with apologies to Alex, let me come back to my personal agenda of trying to compute the dimension here. Okay? All right, so... So what do we know about this space? So for example, we computed the dimensions already for the flags and the Grassmannian and so on. So let's just ask ourselves, so what's the dimension? So for example, we want to know something about these spaces. So for example, what's the dimension? And actually there's hiding a little more here. We'll see a few more things when I write some things down. Okay, so let me just standardize notation a little bit. So, okay, I'm not being fair because so far the only concrete examples I've written down for you are the permutation ones. But now let me observe that, okay, so I already told you what I want to do is I want to just start thinking about representatives in G mod B. So I'm just going to take a representative in that coset space. So in particular, I'm allowed to multiply on the right by B, the Borel, right, to try to get a standard representation. So since we're allowed to multiply on the right by B because we're in G mod B, okay, so what does it mean that you're multiplying on the right by upper triangulars? That means that you're allowed to do column operations to the right, okay? Okay. So in particular, that means that given any matrix that's supposed to represent a flag for me, I can put it in the following form. It's a kind of... Everything okay? Okay, it's a kind of row echelon type form. Okay, so let me explain what I mean. So you're going to get basically something that looks like a permutation matrix, except you're allowed to, you're allowed to sweep up and to the left, sort of. Let me just write down an example. I'll try to explain what I mean. So it's this example that I happen to have. And what this is going to, what this form is going to let us know is we're going to be able to compute the dimension, and I'll be able to say a few more things. So, okay. So what I've done to, so it's sort of, so we're doing column operations to the right. So you sort of think about when you teach your linear algebra students how to do row echelon form, except you tilt this way. So you look at it that way. Okay. So you start at the bottom row. You look for the first place that a non-zero thing appears. You make that one, and now you just, again, standard row echelon stuff. You get rid of the stuff to the right. Remember, you're looking this way. Okay, and then same thing. You turn your head, look for the bottom. To the rightmost if you're looking this way, and then you erase everything to the right, and so on. So then you just keep doing that. So you see that. Wherever I have a 1 here, everything below it, well, below, to the right, is 0. But then there's a couple of spots that I have, have no control over. So these are my free parameters. Okay? And, okay, so this I don't have time to go through in detail. Alex is going to scold me. But you can convince yourself. So here what I've drawn is if you set all the stars that I've circled in blue, if you set all those to 0, you just get a permutation matrix. So what I'm trying to say is that the stuff with the stars possibly being non-zero is exactly the set of flags that are in X sigma 0. Okay? So the space of, so I guess this is another exercise, I guess. So exercise. Okay, so note, if all the stars are 0, you get exactly the permutation matrix. So you get sigma, and then you just convince yourself using the formula that's now covered up that the set of these guys that look like this, okay, is exactly this guy. Okay, so in particular, you can count. Okay, so in this particular case, we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Okay, so we have something that's... Oh. Oh, yeah. Okay, hang on. Yeah, okay, sorry. I clearly messed something up. Okay, all right. Erase the third column. Yes. Okay. Sorry. Oh, yeah. It's not even square. Sorry about that. That's really bad. Okay. I messed something up. Oh, well. Okay. Right. So, So, the set of such. Okay. So, what is this now? Okay. So, now that I've erased that, it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Anyway. So you can compute. Okay, and in particular, for some people here, this is no surprise. You can actually give a combinatorial calculation of this dimension just from the information, the permutation matrix. So, let's see. So, this guy is just c to the m for some m, and what is that m? It's just the length of sigma. All right. Oh, sorry. I didn't tell you what this is called. This is called the Buha cell. Okay. Okay. All right, let's see here. I'm running out of time. Okay, so let me, I'll be okay, all right. Okay, so now, finally, tell you what Schubert varieties are. You just close that inside the flag. So, okay. Oh, one more thing, which will come in handy later in the week, is also to observe that X sigma 0 is just the B orbit of B sigma. Okay, so we're sitting inside G mod B, and so now that you just have the Borel acting on the left, and you just take orbits, and you just get what we just, which also makes sense because again, if you're multiplying by B on the left, what are you doing? You're doing row operations, and you're allowed to add up, so you just sweep up and over. Okay, so definition. Okay, so now with no zero, it's just the closure of X. Okay, and we've already computed dimensions, so now observe. Okay, so I just told you, well, exercise, I guess. I just told you that X sigma zero is just a B orbit, so B acts on the cell, so it acts on the Schubert variety. So in particular, X sigma is a union of Bruhaus cells. In other words, so you're just attaching on a couple smaller Bruhaus cells. And I'll draw some pictures in a few minutes. Indicate that. But let me just define something that Alistair is going to need in the afternoon. So the Bruhau order just tells you when, so x tau, when is x tau sitting inside x sigma, when is x tau 0 sitting inside x sigma. Okay, so it describes for which pairs you have that. So it just, there's a combinatorial way to say this as well, but let me just say it geometrically for lack of time, and hopefully Alistair will pick up on this. So you just say, so definition tau, if that's true. All right. Okay, 2 minutes. So now let me get to drawing some pictures of these guys. And this is where my true identity as a Hamiltonian symplectic person comes out. Okay, because I want to draw moment map images. Okay, so here's how to picture these guys in terms of polytopes and subpolytopes. Okay? Okay, so briefly, let's go back to the compact picture. Thinking of it this way. Okay? Then actually Alex already hinted at this already when he talked about the Horn problem with Hermitian matrices A plus B is equal to C. So another way to think about this space, forget about G mod B, just think about compactly, another way to think about it is, well, a flag is just a choice of orthonormal basis, and I can just think of an orthonormal basis as a choice of eigenvectors, okay, for a Hermitian matrix. So I could just as well think about this as a set of Hermitian matrices in N by N. Except I should specify what the eigenvalues are. So this is, again, sort of coming back to something that Alex was hinting at. And I just want to think of it this way so I can just write down a map and tell you what it is. Okay, it's just another way of thinking about this flag manifold. just telling, it's the basis is just telling you the information of where the eigenvalues happen to sit. Sorry, where the eigenvectors happen to sit. Okay? So in this language, the standard flag just goes to this diagonal matrix. Okay? And a V sigma just goes to, V sigma just goes to where you've switched around which eigenvector, which basis corresponds to which eigenvalue. So I just permuted it. Okay, so just permute which ones correspond to which one. Okay, so if you do it that way, then you can define, turns out, a really simple-minded map, which is take diagonals, okay? Let me just call this space O lambda, okay? From O lambda to Rn, where all I do is if I have a matrix, Hermitian with a particular spectrum, but never mind, it's just a matrix, I just look at the diagonals. Okay, for the experts in the audience, this is no new thing. It's just the T-moment map. It's the moment map for the torus action that we've been talking about. But never mind. All I care about is that it's there. We can think about it. Okay? And the magic, which allows me to draw the pictures on the polytopes, which Joel will also talk about later today. So the magic here, which is a fact in just symplectic Hamiltonian torus, it's a theorem in a Hamiltonian geometry. Okay, is that the, let's call it mu. The image of mu is a convex polytope. And then in 3 minutes, I'll tell you that the Schubert varieties have images that are subpolytopes, so you can use the Mollet map to just take a snapshot and think about the Schubert varieties as subpolytopes inside a larger one. Okay, so let me draw an example. I guess, well, for the experts, you already noticed this. I actually, I don't quite, how shall I say this? I really want to go to Rn plus 1. So keep projecting down. And the reason is that the central direction doesn't do anything. So I actually end up in a hyperplane in Rn. So if you really want to draw the pictures, you actually just want to project at the hyperplane. But anyway, so there's a slight ambiguity there, but I hope the experts will forgive me. So, in particular for C3, again, you might think that T3 is acting, but it's really a T2. So then the picture looks like this. Oh, sorry. In my excitement, I forgot to tell you that the vertices here are exactly the images of the fixed points. Okay, so for C3, flag C3, then I'm looking at S3, so I should get 6 vertices, and indeed I do. Okay? And if you want to, you can think about this picture as actually sitting inside the dual of the Lie algebra, and so what you're doing is you're just taking a Weyl group orbit. Okay, so now just a few more fun facts and then I'll stop. Okay, so I said this already in words, let me write it down. So the images of the Schubert varieties that we've been discussing are just subpolytopes in here. So you just pick a subset of the vertices. can use that. And another way to think about the Schubert varieties, which is my favorite way of thinking about them, is, okay, so I'm thinking, so this picture is an R2, using a standard inner product in R2, or if you like, the standard inner product on T2, the dual of the Lie algebra of the torus, then, well, all right, so let's see if I can do this pretty well. Let's pick this direction. So by picking a vector in the vector space, I can pair with that vector, and I'll get an R-valued function out of it. So let me write it over here. What I'm about to say is that an R-valued function that I can cook up very easily just using a component is actually a Morse function, and the Buha cells are just Morse cells for that Morse function. So let's see. Bye. I'm not going to go into details here, but if you pick a nice direction in this vector space, and then using the standard inner product, okay, then you can define, you just take the moment map, just take the diagonals, and just pair it with X. This is a function on, now it's a real valued function because I'm using the inner product to contract. I get a real valued function, and this is a Morse function with critical points exactly the T fixed points and the Buha cells. Are just Morse cells. Okay. So let's just draw a few pictures here. This is how to take snapshots of these Schubert varieties. Okay, so again, example. Flags in C3. I'll just draw up two and then I'll have to quit. So for example, I get one Schubert variety corresponding to this one, for example. And then let me just draw it on the same one. So for example, this one contains this Schubert variety, which is that one, for example. Okay, and if you just tilt your head slightly and think that that's my Morse direction, you can see that you start to be able to see that in fact this is the flow up with respect to that direction, but that perhaps comes after you've been thinking about this for a while. Anyway, I'll stop there. Thank you very much. Again, one more time. This is the place to go. Oh yeah, right. Yeah, okay, sorry. So the last 5-10 minutes is not in here. But you can ask me or Lisa or any of the other symplectic geometers in the room. Say again? Where to buy the book? Oh, good grief. I don't know. Amazon? I don't know. Bookstore next door, yeah. The first place I would send you is Ana Canastra Silva Lectures on Symplectic Geometry. Michel Audin probably is better, actually. There is a book by Michel Audin. What's the title, Lisa? The Topology of Torus Actions on Symplectic Manifolds. I should tell you, just as a way of advertising, a lot of what I said in the last 5 minutes is much more general than just for quadrant orbits. Sorry, flag varieties. Yeah. So. Say that again?
The image of the moment map, you said that
I'm doing Hermitian matrices, so I'm on the diet and I've got reals. Hermitian. Yeah, Hermitian, so A is A equals A conjugate, so along the diagonal I've got real numbers. Okay? Sorry about that. Didn't say that. Okay? Yeah, sure.